It's 8:08. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. In the studio with me now with a Trails Update, I've got Charlie Sturgis from Mountain Trails. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So you say there's something new going on with the rail trail.
Yeah. First, hey, let's just start with, enjoy the riding and running while you can out there. It's absolutely been gorgeous lately. Things are actually in great shape. Yeah, the rail trail. So, the rail trail went back out to bid this year. Mountain Trails has actually managed the rail trail, all 26 miles of it, for the last almost 15 years. What we did see is we lost in what was basically called a low-cost bid. So we were not the lowest bidder. The rail trail is a fairly involved project, basically 100 feet wide and 26, 27 miles long. And between beaver dams, bridges, vandalism, landowners, and whatnot, you have a lot going on, weed control, so forth. So we have lost the bid, which means at this point, the very first half mile by White Pine is actually up in the gray zone. The city owns that, and Mountain Trails will see if we can actually deal with that as part of maybe our new snow biking program. We're going to be doing some additional grooming. So that may get covered in that. But we're not absolutely sure that the level of quality of the previous care, which if you thought it was quality, we feel like we did a pretty good job, is probably it's a little bit up in the air, a little in question. So going to a lowest bidder is not always the best way to make sure you have a good quality product out there. And certainly the area between 40, if not Rasmussen Road out there, or not Rasmussen, but Richardson Flat Road, that's the highest use area and the area that requires probably least the most amount of grooming and so forth, especially in the wintertime. So what we're asking the public to do is basically if you see that things aren't getting taken care of, let Mountain Trails know, and we'll pass it on to state parks. That way we can actually monitor the situation a little bit. We're not sure that we're out forever, but we are technically out for 5 years at this point. And, it's a fairly expensive proposition. It's a significant revenue loss for Mountain Trails as well. So.
Yeah. But in terms of what is expected, I mean, is there a minimum standard of some sort in terms of what must be accomplished during the winter?
The summer is more definitive, but the winter is grooming. We usually put it as kind of in our B schedule. So Round Valley is our primary and most important area. So that's kind of on the A schedule. So in a big year like last year, we're probably on the rail trail three to four times a week, especially in towards town. As we go further out, the level of service after Wanship probably drops off. Also, it tends to have some issues where people plow the rail trail, run their cattle on it, whatever. So we're not as motivated at that end. But we do see that the amount of use in the from Richardson Flat Road in is significant, and that area is probably going to be a little bit up in the air. So hopefully not too bad, but, there's trash cans. All those things are part of the deal, and dog poop bags. If you look at the flooding along the rail trail where the beaver dams are right down past Chatham, that's all Mountain Trails has been in previously Mountain Trails management. And now it'll be somebody else's management that has unfortunately probably come in on a really, really low bid.
Right. But again, I mean, that trash collection is expected. The poop bags are part of the bid.
Bathroom cleaning, all that stuff is, this is not the state park's favorite park, right? This is kind of their little bit of a black sheep for them. And so that's how the management came over to the Mountain Trails in the long run. And now that it's gone back out to bid, it went out, like I said, unfortunately, went out to a low cost bid that did not necessarily, fulfill the expertise requirements, is what I would say.
So how much of a hit to you or to Mountain
About
Trails?
$80,000.
Yeah.
Yeah. And of course, we're also now.
Not net, though. That's
No, yeah. Not net. And, and be perfectly honest, it does help with the cost of machines. If you know you're booking a machine for, 30% of the rail trail, then it makes sense to buy that machine, right? And 70% trail building. So it helps offset the cost of machines. The big deal for us, probably at this point, or the upside, is that we're going to be able to spend more time focusing on the Bonanza Flat planning. We'll hopefully be doing a little bit more with the Park City Mountain next year. We have some plans that we didn't follow through on this year. And with the Mayflower property selling, who knows? You know, call me crazy. I said it was going to be done in 6 months, but maybe the Wild Trail will get done one of these days in the full concept, which is, you know, almost a 30-mile loop. So we got some other things to focus on. We're happy to do that. And once again, we just want people to be really aware that if they notice the change in procedures out there, they can let us know. But also, we've been pretty much taken off that job.
Okay. So what did the bid go for? Any idea?
About $82,500. And if you really think about it from a private, you know, trying to make a profit point of view, we as a nonprofit could see it as a little bit of a lost leader, right? I mean, it was okay for us to be over a little bit. We bid it at $127,000 because we felt that there were so many new unknowns to the project, and there's a significant capital risk to the contractor that we felt that we had to bid it higher to cover those risks. And so now we're hope it all works out.
Okay,
we're going to refocus our energies.
We'll pay attention
and do that.
Okay. Hey, anything else?
You know, just help us out on Live Give.
Okay. Hey, thanks, Charlie.
Thanks.
Well, joining me now in the studio is Park City Council member and Mayor-elect Andy Bierman. Good morning to you, Andy, and congratulations.
Good morning, Leslie, and thank you. Busy morning with Live PC, Give PC.
Right. So now that you've had the time for the election results to kind of set in, I mean, tell us your reaction.
Oh, I am just really excited and grateful and eager to get to work, and want to express a big thank you to the Park City community for having trust and faith in me and supporting me. And also a big thank you to the tons of volunteers and people that opened their houses and took time with me.
Yeah. So we haven't seen the final financial disclosures yet, but about a week and a half ago, you had outspent your opponent nearly 2-1. That happened about 4 years ago when Jack Thomas outspent you about 2-1.
Yep.
Is that what it takes to be mayor? Money?
Unfortunately, I think it depends on the race. And in the race with Jack, I didn't think I needed to spend that much money. And I backed off of fundraising and actually sent a little bit back or turned it down at the end. And I wished I had spent more money to get my name out there. And I felt like with the fact that Dana was a local celebrity, a three-term mayor, he was better known in town. And I felt the need to spend some additional money. And in particular, I did things I hadn't done much before, which was do direct mail, because there are people that don't listen to the radio, believe it or not, don't read the paper. And I was running into them as I was knocking on doors, and they didn't know me. So I made a point of doing a lot of mailing, which kind of goes against my green ethos, but I think it helped me win.
Yeah, I noticed a lot of those postcards that came to my house. I mean, how did you just send them, you know, to every city
resident? I had some targeted lists. Certainly you can get the voter registration info from the county, and you can see who your voters are or who's likely to vote. And I focused on that. So rather than sending out 5,000 copies and double for households and that, we pruned that down.
Yeah. Well, and then again, then we have the story with emails coming out saying, you know, and I got one of those, hey, Leslie and Dar, you haven't voted yet. Well, yeah. I'm one of those people that like to, like, vote on Election Day. So was that part of your strategy then, using that, the fact that I hadn't cast a ballot?
Well, we certainly had a lot of different strategies. The largest part was for me to get out and knock on as many doors as possible. But as we got down to the tail end of the campaign, I started reaching out to, in terms of knocking on doors, calling, email, texting folks that are known supporters and or likely voters, as did my many volunteers. And the volunteers, they were tasked with reach out to the people you know and encourage them to vote. At the end, it's a little bit tricky to know exactly who's voted because of lag time. We get some updates from the county. So I think some people got pestered that already voted.
Yeah. The fact that you lost, that Dana lost by 250 votes, does that give you, do you feel like you've got a mandate, though, to move ahead?
I think a mandate's a strong word. I think we got reinforcement that the city is moving forward with community values, and people are relatively happy with that. But, I mean, a 55% support on it still means 45% of the town like the other guy. Now, whether that was personal because he's a friend or they like his tone, or whether that had to do with policy, it's hard to tell. Ditto whether people supported me. But I think all in all, my take. Campaigns are educational. You have interactions with hundreds, if not thousands, of people over the course of that campaign. And I had 5 months getting a lot of feedback from the public. And in general, I think we are absolutely on the right track, although I think there's a lot of adjustments that need to be made, and there are a lot of things we can do better. And I hope to sort of dig into those as I debrief from this campaign and have some time to go back through my notes and think about it and figure out what we need to focus on over this next year.
Yeah. I got to ask you about this, though, that we heard from one of your supporters who was questioning KPCW's coverage of your victory, saying that well, it was a complete lack of our usual coverage, and including the results. And I guess, I mean, you said that you haven't talked with her, but I'm just, do you have that sense? And I'm trying to feel where that's coming from.
I think there was a little gun shyness by the media on both sides. I think both campaigns were emotional, and there were some complaints when either Dana or I got coverage on the radio or in the paper. And so I think that probably impacted the amount of time we had on air or in print near the end of the campaign. To me, having done several of these, it seemed like it was very quiet at the end. But some of that might have had to do with mail-in voting, too. It's a very different rhythm than the crescendo you get when everybody, you know, you wave signs on Tuesday and we all vote at the end. So I think we're all getting used to that pattern. And I think the coverage, by and large, was good.
Well, and it used to be that we did the election eve campaign, and it was because it people would go out and we could kind of capture that last weekend kind of campaigning. Well, we can't do that anymore, because if people are getting an election ballot 3 weeks in advance, that's when we want to kind of capture that. But I agree with you. It is difficult for us to sustain this to the very end. I mean, but we haven't done any less coverage. And I guess that's what I'm trying to figure out, why somebody would think that.
Oh, I don't know. We can probably all look back and do a debrief on it. I just think it's a very different rhythm with the mail-in voting, and we were all adjusting to that. And it's, you know, it's a small town, so these elections can be a little hard because they're so personal. We're all friends, and that makes it awkward for everybody.
Well, let's move on. I did want to ask you, though, as mayor-elect, you've got now an open city council seat. Can you talk to me a little bit about that process?
A little bit. We're sort of going through the technical aspects of that right now. We can't look for a new council member until the seat is actually vacant. So we will begin in January with that. We will. There's a noticing period we put out there and an application period that people can put in. And then the council and I will meet, and we will discuss the we won't. We'll meet publicly on it. It's all open session, but we'll review those, and then we will have some public discussions and select a candidate. I expect the process will probably take about a month with all the noticing requirements, and hopefully our goal would be to have somebody in place before the February retreat.
All right. The Homestake parking lot for employees. You heard from a woman. I wasn't sure if she was an employee or a business owner, but she was justifiably upset that the city is considering using the Homestake parking lot for the Sundance Film Festival as a paid parking lot. You know, she says Old Town employees are prepared to walk out should that happen. Mm-hmm. What's the city's guarantee that this isn't going to happen? I mean, do we have any at this point?
That was the first I had heard of that. Our understanding was that that's not something that's been decided. And certainly it wouldn't be decided without council weighing in. And Becca Gerber and myself both said that this needs to be a policy discussion. So we have to be very sensitive to the fact we are changing the system. We're trying to retrain everybody. I have serious concerns about us changing that midstream and handling it different than Sundance than we would the rest of the winter. So we'll sort that out. But I don't know, frankly, having just heard about it last night, I don't think that was a real threat. I think it's like most things. The city talks about a lot of different options, and then we narrow down the ones that are functional. And I imagine that's one that was just on the plate.
So has the city made any obligations to Sundance about that lot? Because it's been used as paid parking.
Yeah, I don't believe we have any obligations, but we have made a commitment to the employees that we'll have a free and easy access lot for them at Homestake throughout the winter. So we're going to have to accommodate that first and foremost.
All right. Wendy Fisher from Utah Open Lands, as others gave an update on the Bonanza Flat, where are we here at this point? Still doing a study?
Yeah, I mean, things are moving along just as we expected. We knew it'd take about a year to get a conservation easement on that, and they spent the whole summer doing monitoring, looking at all the ecosystems, and that's what this report was about. It was an evaluation of ecological health up there and what the current uses are. We're going to continue to do that through the winter because it's a very different season, very different uses, and then in the spring we're going to craft draft an easement. But in the meantime, we've been meeting. We've got both a group of governmental entities that contributed to this, and then we have a technical stakeholders groups. And both of those groups are meeting and giving feedback to the city and Utah Open Lands, as well as COSAC. And it's going to be complicated to craft this. We really need to get it right. That was a big purchase for the city. It's important to a lot of people, and we're going to take our time and make sure and dial it in. But I want to continue to remind people, we bought it with the understanding that it was for preservation. That is the first and most important element of this.
Yeah, you heard from a couple of avid snowmobilers asking council not to ban them. Can we even say anything about it at this point?
Well, I mean, snowmobile use on that property has been illegal for a very long time. It's a no trespassing, and the fact that people have been illegally using it doesn't mean that we're taking anything away. Our plan at this point is status quo, which it will continue to be not an allowed use there, and we will have some degree of monitoring. I'm not sure what degree of policing we'll have.
Yeah, and I had talked earlier with City Manager Diane Foster about those of us who, I mean, at one point used to just be able to ski up there and enjoy it. And now with the gate, and the gate is now up, and if you don't pay the $400 or yeah, whatever it is, you don't get to access it. Is there going to be some kind of area where city residents could? I mean, is that discussion happening?
I hope so. I think that's there's a lot of back and forth on trying to keep the seasonality up there and not overloving it. And I too love to ski up there. And I think as the seasons get shorter here, it really extends our Nordic season and gives us a beautiful setting. So I think that will be one of the big discussion points over the next couple of months. In the meantime, you can ski up the road and access it this winter. And there is some talk that we might put in a little bit of track to try it out. But I think this winter would be premature to have anything formal set up. We'll know by next summer what we're going to do for the following winter.
All right. Also, an amendment for business licensing during Sundance. This was during work session, so no decision that was made, but certainly a lot of talk about how to manage this one.
Yeah,
any suggestions?
Are you talking about the dark storefront?
Yeah.
So not just specific to Sundance. Yeah. In June, we passed a ordinance to try to limit the ability to keep your spaces empty year round and rent them just for Sundance. And basically, the way it works is if you don't have a vibrant and active space, you are unable to pull a liquor license, which basically limits hospitality lounges. At the time, we knew that it was kind of a complex ordinance, and it might need some tweaks, and this is our first round of tweaks. We already feel like people are finding workarounds, and so we're honing it in a little bit and made a few adjustments.
Okay. Let's see. The Kimball Garage development wants to keep the crane up. You voted against it, but it did pass. It's going to stay open through the spring, huh?
Yep, I was out on a limb by myself on that particular one. And it wasn't an easy thing because I think everybody wants to see that project get done as quickly as possible. But as an Old Town resident, I see the impact of this kind of construction and having cranes in the street. And I think we're going to have a very, very busy winter. And I'm concerned about the traffic constraints there and the construction constraints and how that's going to impact the rest of the street and the neighborhoods, as is the rest of council. And we just had differences on how to best accomplish that. But in the end, they are going to be allowed to keep the crane up. And one request that we put in is they are going to lower that crane during times like Christmas and Sundance and our upcoming Olympic event so that it has less visual impact.
Yeah. So do we know at this point what that space is going to be? The special event space is still in question, right?
No, and Nan asked that question last night. We don't know. It's back in front of Planning Commission, and we're still debating the uses. But I think they feel construction-wise they're going to build it the same regardless. They might make some interior changes if the uses change.
Yeah. So are they behind schedule? Is that why the crane?
Yeah, they were supposed to have the crane off of there by the end of this month, and that's why they asked for the extension to April. I believe they're planning on being complete around June.
All right. The city council going out on a noise field trip tonight at 10 o'clock. What, a little bar crawl?
Yeah, I'm going to miss that one. I'm headed out of town, and living in Old Town, I get my share of noise sampling. But yeah, there's some debate about how we're going to measure the decibel levels off of Main Street and how it impacts the neighborhood. So the staff thought it would be helpful for everybody to both experience it on the street and up in the neighborhoods and see what the real noise impacts are as we try to craft that ordinance. And I think tonight might be a little bit of a rowdy night, particularly down around High West with all the LivPC activities going on.
Great. All right. Anything else from the agenda that you thought was worth mentioning?
Let's see. No, you know, it was just a really technical agenda last night, so nothing in particular that jumps out.
Okay. Well, again, congratulations, Mayor-elect Andy Bierman. A well-deserved time off.
Thanks
so
much, Leslie.
Okay. KPCW News Time now, 8:32. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's KPCW Local News Hour. Today, Friday, November 10th, also the annual Day of Giving here in Park City, Live PC, Give PC. In the studio with me, I have the executive director of the Park City Community Foundation, which has made this all happen, along with one of the board members of the foundation, Bill Rock, who's also, of course, CEO of Park City Mountain. Good morning to both of you.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Katie, we talked to you just over an hour ago, and at that point, we were at about $400,000. Where are things now?
Yeah, we were just shy of $400,000, and we've blown past that. We're now at $457,000, and I just can't believe that. You know, I think people are still getting their morning coffees, eating their breakfast, and we've already raised that much money for the nonprofits of this community. It's really phenomenal.
That really is. When we started this, what was it, 7 years ago?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, what was the first goal?
We didn't have a goal the first year, and we raised $330,000. And when I woke up at 4:30 this morning, I logged on and we had already raised that. So it's pretty amazing how much the generosity has increased year after year after year.
Yeah. Well, I know that the goal is, we're just saying 2 million because you know what?
What's a too many nines.
Too many nines, yeah. But ambitious. And again, I mean, it's just something to reach for, right? I mean,
You know, worst case scenario, we raise a lot of money for nonprofits, but I know that we are a town who likes to set and reach big goals. And I have full faith that with everyone's generosity, we can meet it. So I encourage people to give early. And often, there's a lot of matching grants on the table, over $300,000 waiting to be matched. So if you make a donation now, the likelihood that it'll be matched by a generous donor is very, very high.
So how does that work? A for-profit business would let's just use KPCW as an example. Mm. 1-7, I think, gave us some money. So they commit so much money and we then can use that?
Yeah, absolutely. So essentially, a donor says, maybe a business might say, okay, we're going to match you this much. And then as donations come online, once you hit that number, their donation goes into the pot.
Yeah. And then, Bill, of course, Vail Resorts and Epic Promise, big contributor in all of this, huh?
Yeah, we're thrilled to be the presenting sponsor today. This is such an amazing event. I mean, ever since I've come to town, I just love this day so much. And we love to be able to be the presenting sponsor because it really lets the Community Foundation focus on the nonprofits and the marketing and making sure they're getting the word out and really supporting all the nonprofits in the community. So we're happy to play that role and be part of the success of the day.
Yeah, so your grant then what helps pay for t-shirts and signs and the website hosting and all of that?
Yeah, and we pay for a lot of orange stuff, I think. So, yeah. But it's fun. So, and also, I look forward to seeing everybody at the party tonight. By the way, I just got a text from Mike Ruzek, co-chair with me, and he said $460,000.
So as we've sit here, $5,000 additionally has been raised. It's pretty amazing.
It sure is, again. And tell me what's going to happen tonight then.
So tonight we have our giving party. We have two amazing MCs, Mr. Bill Rock and Mike Ruzek, a really wonderful band. And for me, it's my favorite night of the year. It is a locals party. You will see all your favorite nonprofit folks and all the people who support them. High West offers food. It's a cash bar. And it's really just a great time. Doors open at 7 p.m. We will have giving stations, so you can come there and give if you haven't already, or you can give again. And it's 21 and older.
Okay. And how many people can you get in there? A bunch?
Yeah, a bunch. And they're actually going to have a tent outside, so there's going to be a really warm and cozy patio area this year, too.
Okay. Bill, why should people take the time today to go online to Live PC, give PC.
Yeah, you know, I think, you know, it's generally, as a newcomer for me, it's been impressive to just see the nonprofit work that gets done in this community and just how effective everybody is. I think every time I talk to an executive director about their mission and what they're working on, I always leave, you know, more educated and impressed. And I think we should be so proud of what goes on in this community. And so this is a chance to really, whether you've ever donated to a nonprofit or you donate all the time, this is a chance to really show your support for the community and, you know, maybe even start a tradition of philanthropy. So, yeah, give it a try. Every dollar is important, and the more participation, the better.
One thing that I know Bill does and other folks around the community is they use this as an opportunity to talk about giving with their kids. The platform is really kid-friendly. There's videos, images, and it gives them a chance to do research and explore and decide. And so I know a lot of families who say to their children, okay, you have $30 to give as you'd like, and they sit there and it's a family discussion. So that's something else that I would encourage people to think about is making this a part of the dinner table conversation tonight.
All right. Is $10, is that the minimum, Ben?
The minimum is $5. So $5 and up. And so really what I love is everyone can participate today.
Yeah. And what do you see in terms of like an average number of nonprofits? You know, I mean, one person would make five,
I think the average is 3 donations per giver. But that that's the average, but I think it's highly variable. We have a lot of people who log on and give to one, and then we have a few amazing people who give to 3.
I know, it's hard to choose.
The website is really intuitive, and so you can also see those matching grants. Mm-hmm. You can see which nonprofits have a matching grant. And I just did my donations before I came in, and you know, the beautiful thing about the way it's set up is you're always tempted to do more. So there's a lot of great nonprofits on there.
Yeah. Okay, well, we'll be getting checks throughout the day, and people can also kind of follow along. Like you said, it is a little bit addicting to watch the numbers kind of check up, but that's livepcgivepc.org.
Yes, and if anyone wants to hit the streets and do some advocacy or is not tech savvy, we are at High West all day with our headquarters and happy to help anyone answer any questions. Just come on by. We're there.
Okay. Well, good luck.
Yeah. Thank you.
On that $2 million goal. Thanks. Bill Rock and Katie Wright with Park City Community Foundation. You're listening to the Local News Hour on KPCW.
Hi, this is Logan Sweeney, designer at Elliott Work Group and supporter of KPCW. Our design team is from across the country and around the world with a focus on creating architecture for private, nonprofit, and public clients throughout Park City and the Mountain West. ElliottWorkGroup.com.
KPCW News Time now, 8:39. Good morning. Well, the Park City Planning Commission looking to dot all of their I's and cross all of their T's as the deadline to make a decision about the Treasure Hill project closes in for at least the conditional use permit. The Park City Planning Commission has repeatedly asked the applicant for Treasure Hill on their plans for mitigations for the negative impacts of the project, some of which they yet to provide. At Wednesday's meeting, the applicant's attorney, Sean Farron, responded to the Planning Commission's latest request.
Francisco noted that there's some things that you have asked for or staff has asked for that you don't have yet. We're preparing those materials for you, and if there are materials that we don't think are appropriate or, you know, we're not going to get together for you for one reason or another, we'll let you know that as well.
DeJory Center is a proud sponsor of KPCW. Located in the heart of High Star Ranch in Camas, the DeJory Center is a multi-purpose event center complete with an indoor live performance arena, private dining rooms, meeting space, restaurant, and bar. More information at DeJoryCenter.com.
Okay, well, let's get back to the news story here. I've got 3 people coming in and out of the stage. But anyways, we heard from Attorney Sean Farron, and then we asked Planning Commission Chairman Adam Strong if they were ready to deliver a decision.
I'm not necessarily saying that we have enough details. I'm saying we're close to ready to make a decision. The absence of detail may play into our decision, but it has become clear that the applicant is going to rest on the submittals that they've made. Although some may think they're deficient, the applicant does not think they're deficient, so they're going to rest on them and see what the decision is.
Farron has also compared Treasure Hill to other projects like the Montage. Strawn says that's not a fair comparison.
First of all, the project itself is different. It's unique, and I think the applicant readily admits that and did so last night. I mean, we've got a large amount of square footage going up inside the historic district of Old Town, which immediately sets it apart from any other CUP that we've ever dealt with. So, yes, we treat it the same, i.e. we run it through the 15 criteria of the LMC, Land Management Code, but we also look at its impacts differently because it's a different project with different square footages in a different place. So we treat it the same, but the outcome may not be the same.
Documents that have been provided are the Woodruff drawings. They've been used by the applicant, staff, and even the public as a means to prove their case. Strawn asked Farron at Wednesday's meeting when they'd like the commission to defer them.
Unfortunately, it's hard for us to tell from the applicant's perspective when we're supposed to rely on those drawings and when we're not supposed to rely on them. I think it's fair to say the applicant thinks that we're supposed to rely on the drawings to figure out, in their words, basic volumetrics, i.e. whether the amount of UEs assigned to the project can fit within the structures that are drawn in the Woodruff drawings. And that may be a bare minimum that the drawings are useful for. There may be more use for them. But I'm just going to have to, and the rest of the commissioners will be doing the same, go back and look and see.
We asked Strong why the city doesn't just go and ask the company who developed the drawings in the first place.
The person who developed them is not, you know, somebody readily available. And they are, like many of the other documents that make up the MPD, they're not the entire thing, so you can't look at them in isolation and say, okay, well, we've got the Woodruff drawings, we'll just approve that much, and decisions made. I mean, the MPD document is big, and it's got lots of attachments, and the Woodruff drawings are one of them, but there are other factors that have to go into the analysis.
There are three meetings left scheduled for the project. The next one will be November 29th, then December 6th as a work session. The Planning Commission is scheduled to make their decision on the conditional use permit request December 13th. News time, 8:43.
Earl Foote here with Nexus IT, keeping KPCW ready for the next breaking story. Nexus IT can help its customers move to the cloud to keep business technology up to date. The cloud grows with its users by offering solutions for startups, storage, and sustainability. 435-487-9099 or nexusitc.net.
8:44 now. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Well, tomorrow is Veterans Day, a day to honor those who have served and protected our country. But as part of that protection, injuries occur, both physical and mental, through the Wounded Warriors Program at the National Ability Center. Help is happening through the Equestrian Program. In the studio with more, I have Katie Richin. She's the group's military program manager. And then on the phone with me, I've got Ginger Mercer. She is an Army veteran and National Ability Center equestrian participant. Good morning to both of you. Katie, why don't you just start by talking about some of the programs that and events that the NAC offers to military personnel and their families?
Absolutely. The NAC has been around, as many of you know, for just over 30 years. Beginning this year, we joined forces with SPLOR down in Salt Lake and have increased our spectrum to offer adventure and recreation programs around the state. Everything from our horseback riding to outdoor rock climbing, down onto the Moab for whitewater rafting, and just about everything and everything else in between. Our military programs have long been at the core of who we are and what we do, in that we were founded and created through a small $5,000 grant to get veterans out onto the slopes here at Park City to ski. Since that point, we've continued to invest in our veterans, their families, and their community to help them get back on their feet, integrate into their community, overcome their own injuries, whether those be visible or invisible, and continue on the path of redefining themselves.
Okay, well, we haven't been able to get Ginger back, but maybe you can talk a little bit about just somebody like Ginger who would participate in a situation like this.
Our programs are open to all veterans. Ginger in particular, I've known Ginger for a number of years and have experienced our equestrian programs to taking part in the Summit Challenge together this summer and tackling Ginger's first 50-miler bike ride. Ginger has participated in our paratriathlon camps as well. For Ginger and for other veterans like her, the common theme seems to pull on finding a way to reclaim a portion of their previous lives, to tap into an identity that they currently or previously held, and to continue to redefine what that means and establish their new identity going forward.
Okay. And again, is there a cost for veterans?
We're fortunate to offer all of our recreational programs at no to little cost for our service members and their families. We have a number of strong community members, corporations, and funders who provided grants to help support these costs.
Okay. Anything else that you wanted to tell us about the program, Katie?
In advance of Veterans Day, we've got a couple great events coming up. Not only today on site here in Park City, we're joining forces with AT&T to lead a kickoff event for our service members. We welcome everyone down in between Live PC, Give PC to come and take part of that and to share in that fun day. We also have Saluting Our Heroes, our annual luncheon taking place next Wednesday, the 15th at noon down at the Grand America in Salt Lake City. Saluting Our Heroes luncheon is going to feature our keynote speaker, Martin Fry, Guinness World Record holder and only man to summit all seven peaks since sail across all seven seas.
Okay. People can get more NAC or discover NAC.org.
Yes.
Okay. Hey, Katie, thanks for your time.
Thank you.
KPCW News Time now, 8:48. Good morning. I'm Leslie Thatcher. Joining me now on the phone from Ryer Woodbury Dance Company, I've got Daniel Giron. Good morning, Daniel.
Hi, how are you?
I'm doing well, thanks. So you're at the Egyptian Theater tonight and tomorrow night. Tell us what's going on.
This is correct. We're a contemporary dance company. We're based in Salt Lake City, Utah. We're happy to come back to the Egyptian Theater. It's becoming an annual event, and we're presenting four works from our contemporary repertory. And these works span dances that are poetic and introspective to entertaining and almost musical theater-styled dance work. So it really spans quite a range of emotional contexts. The music is varied. So there's music that is klezmer music. There is music that is written for these particular dances by contemporary composers. And so it's quite a journey that really has something for everybody.
Yeah. So how many performers are you going to bring up with you?
The company's six dancers, so it will be the six dancers performing all of the works.
Okay. Wow.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Pretty.
Yeah, I know. It's a lot, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And I was going to say, the Egyptian stage is a little bit on the small side, but it serves your purposes just fine?
Well, the beauty about the Egyptian theater is even though it's a smaller stage, we are used to adapting to different stages because we travel around the world. But the beauty is the intimacy. And so it's really wonderful to see these bodies in motion. And to see these bodies so close up and the beautiful athletes that these dancers are. And so there's like great feats of strength and there's really amazing things that they do with their bodies. And then there's great moments of distilled beauty that you can really see in a unique perspective. And because some of the work is, you know, fun and kind of has a party feel to it, it's really a nice space to be in. And so you can really experience a lot of different emotions very close up and very intimate.
All right.
So the Egyptian actually proves to be a great space for contemporary dance.
That's awesome. And I noticed that actually two of the dances are, what, choreographed by you?
They sure are. Yep, it's true. As part of my job at Ryer Woodbury, I serve as a resident choreographer. So each year I make about two pieces a year.
Wonderful. Okay, so we'll be able to see them both. Again, showtime is 8 o'clock both nights. And tickets start, I believe, at just $19. So great opportunity to see the Ryer Woodbury Dance Company. Anything else?
Yeah, definitely.
Want people to know?
You know what? It's a good time. I think sometimes people think about modern dance and contemporary dance, so they're not quite sure what to make of it. But it's really a great time. People can come and have a really fabulous, you know, night out in Park City and come see contemporary dance.
Okay. Hey, Daniel. Thank you.
All right. Thanks so much,
Daniel Giron. Again, the Artistic Director with Ryer Woodbury Dance Company. You can get more information by going to parkcityshows.com. KPCW News Time now, 8:52. Good morning, I'm Leslie Thatcher. It's the KPCW Local News Hour. Well, November is National Diabetes Awareness Month, and the People's Health Clinic hosting a Diabetes Awareness Day on Tuesday. In the studio to tell us more about that, the Executive Director, Beth Armstrong, along with Development Director, Amy Armour. Good morning.
Good morning, Leslie.
So what's happening on Tuesday? Amy, do you want to start?
Sure. Tuesday is World Diabetes Day. And in honor of National Diabetes Month and World Diabetes Day, we are hosting a Diabetes Awareness Health Fair from 4 to 7 p.m. at People's Health Clinic.
Okay, so what's going to happen there?
So the whole purpose of this is so many people in Utah nationally are affected by diabetes, and we want to make sure that people have a resource where they can come and they can get their risk assessed. They can get blood glucose tests and A1C, BMI to see if they are at risk, if they do fall into the pre-diabetes or diabetes level so that they can get treated.
All right. Any idea how prevalent diabetes is in Summit and Wasatch County? Because you serve both communities.
Right, right. Yeah. I don't have those numbers, but I do have Utah numbers. And 1 in 10 adults in Utah have diabetes. 1 in 3 have pre-diabetes, and most of them don't even know it. So those are huge numbers, and those are representative of our national numbers. Beth, I think you said 80 million?
80 million are either undiagnosed or diagnosed with diabetes or prediabetes. That's 80 million.
And why is it so dangerous? I mean, why is it something that we need to be careful about?
Well, you know, the good thing about diabetes, if you have prediabetes or type 2 diabetes, that can be controlled with diet and exercise. You can also prevent the onset of diabetes with lifestyle, a healthy lifestyle. So that's so great. You know, if you're going to have a disease, you can prevent it and also control it. Yep. And in some cases, reverse it.
Right. And does it mean, are overweight people, you know, I mean, is that, does it go hand in hand with obesity?
Well, so much of it is genetic. If you have diabetes in your family, you are more at risk for diabetes. And also, if you come from certain ethnic groups, you are more at risk for diabetes.
Didn't know that. So in terms of what happens, people will get poked?
So, yes.
A little blood sample?
People can get poked.
You make it sound so scary.
It's Pricked. Actually, yeah, no, I mean, we are partnering with the American Diabetes Association, with Summit County Department of Health, Wasatch County Department of Health, EATS, Park City, Novo Nordisk, The Mark, Take Care Utah, and we're all going to, everybody will have a table in the lobby of People's Health Clinic to do all of these testing, to provide diabetes education, prevention, healthy lifestyle education. So that's what we are looking for. We want people to come on in and find out if they're at risk.
Okay. Do they need to make an appointment or just show up?
They can just show up. It's totally free. Everybody is welcome. You do not have to be a patient of People's Health Clinic. It's open to the entire public.
Great.
And I just want to circle back to the sticks. For the A1Cs, it's a simple finger stick, so it's really not painful, and it's quick and it's easy, and it's better to come in and get that test done so you know. It's better to know, and that way you can find out if you need to treat it. Or we're also going to have some lifestyle changes, just real simple things that you can change to make a difference in your life. And like Amy said, it's open to everybody. Anyone in the public that wants to come up, we'd love to give you a tour of the clinic. We'd love to tell you more about what we do. But more importantly, we want you to just come in and get tested.
All right. And again, I mean, I think some of those changes are really maybe just fewer carbs.
And it's a lot about exercise, too. Mm-hmm. It has a great deal to do with how much activity you get in your day.
And also not fewer carbs, but healthy carbs.
Healthy carbs.
There's a difference between carbs that are absorbed right away and healthy carbs that contain fiber and that are good for your body.
Right. Cookies or some whole grains.
Right. Exactly. There you go.
Right. And we also just, while we're here, want to remind everybody about today, of course, being Live PC, Give PC, and People's Health Clinic is at totally involved and motivated, and we would love if you go on to donate, if you would consider clicking on People's Health Clinic as well. Okay. Every little bit helps.
All right. Beth and Amy, thanks.